Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you so much. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Close Up Talk Radio. It's nice to have you with us. This is going to be an important conversation today because, as you know, everybody these days seems to be very, very interested in saving money. You know, with inflation and the increase in prices of almost everything everywhere, saving money has become a real critical issue for a lot of folks, literally in every walk of life, almost, unless you're a multimillionaire. But even then, you know, millionaires worry about saving money too. But with the growing inflation and general distrust of banks, that's another issue that's bothering a lot of people. Folks want to preserve their wealth. Our guest, Lance Groth, emphasizes a truly unique way to maintain their assets and to also save significant money in the process. He has a very interesting story. I'll tell you a little bit about it, and then Lance is going to join us on the line here, and we will explore this in detail. I think you're going to find this pretty fascinating. Anyway, Lance is the co-founder of Groth 1031, Inc. It's an exchange accommodator headquartered in Brooklyn and also in San Diego. And we'll get him to explain what that means, an exchange accommodator. Anyway, according to Lance, a 1031 exchange is a tax shelter where people who sell investment properties can use it to defer paying capital gains tax. According to the tax laws, an investor has 180 days to make a 1031 exchange, with the first 45 days given to identify a property that they want to put money into or invest in. Now, Lance and his company, Groth 1031, facilitates the use of a 1031 exchange. That's where the money earned by a real estate transaction can be reinvested into a new property in order to avoid paying capital gains tax on the revenue from that sale. Lance also adds that it's for investment in business properties and commercial real estate as well, as opposed to personal homes. Also, many unique types of properties have been involved, such as land, skyscrapers, and even a cell tower. And his company also has connections to many off-market listings as well. People think that a 1031 exchange, I'm using that term, I'm not that terribly familiar with it. I'm sure it's referred to as a 1031 rather than a 1031 or a 1031. I'm just calling it 1031. It's a tax. People think it's a tax loophole for the rich, but actually it's a tax loophole for the informed, says Lance. Anybody can do it if they have a property worth anywhere from $50,000 up to $50 million or $5 million. We'll find out more about that as well. Lance got his start as an attorney focusing on real estate tax laws, and he's had several friends that have invested in real estate who would often ask him for help. However, when they sold, they would pay ridiculous amounts of capital gains tax. So Lance researched ways around it and stumbled on this 1031 exchange, which is a whole industry dedicated to assist people in avoiding to pay capital gains tax through the sale of investment property. That's really what it's all about. And Groth 1031 was officially founded in December of 2017. And he says because people are nervous when they do this, they offer personalized service. They'll offer their cell numbers to them. We want to assure everybody they have a support system throughout the entire process. And he's eager to get the word out about 1031 exchanges. He hosts a webinar, by the way, every 2 weeks, which offers additional information and opportunities. He's big on education, and that's what he's doing today. He's in educating our audience about a 1031. He, by the way, has been featured in Opportunity Zone magazine as one of the top 10 most influential people in the realm of tax and real estate. So that's what we're going to be talking about. If this is of any interest to you, or you have a situation, you know, investment property that might be involved in this, listen up. You're going to learn something, and I think it's going to be a very valuable half hour for you. So let's welcome him. Lance is in Brooklyn, New York. Again, he's Lance Groth, and he has a great website. I'll give you that as we go along. But Lance, good morning. How are you today? Nice to have you here.
Hey, good morning. I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm really well, too. So glad you're here. Listen, this is am I right calling it a 1031 exchange? Is that the way you refer to it?
You nailed it. 1,031 just sounded off.
I did. Okay. Yeah, it does. 1,031. That's crazy. You know, let's look at your background a little bit, and then we'll go into this. You're a tax attorney. You got into the real estate end of it as an attorney. Am I right there?
Yeah, I focused in tax and real estate law in law school, and I just got into this industry. And it's just been the only thing that I've only focused on, like from law school to working in my professional career and just focusing on tax and property law and just kind of understanding the nature of business organizations and just landed me in the industry. And I've just been here ever since I walked out of law school.
And well, you're in the New York area, you're in Brooklyn, obviously, you know, buildings there. You can actually purchase air in New York, can't you?
Yes, you can. Air rights, mineral rights, all things exchangeable.
Yeah, I know it sounds crazy, but you sure can. And they, by air, I mean that's the amount of room above the top of your building to, I guess it goes, how high could it go? Golly, with the new skyscrapers and apartment buildings in Manhattan, there's no limit. Would that be right?
There's limits in certain areas. It depends on
like,
you know, the FAA rules and things of that nature.
Oh,
but it's basically building the rights to build up, which you know can be bothersome to your neighbors. So it's a very valuable right in New York.
It's amazing. I know that. So let's talk a little bit about this 1031 exchange. Were you aware of this, by the way? Did you learn about it in school? Or did you find out about it after you had been in business for a while as an attorney?
No, I found out probably my third year of law school. I was working in a business law clinic, and I went to law school in San Diego at Thomas Jefferson School of Law. And San Diego is about 20 minutes away from Mexico, so we would get so many just kind of Mexican entrepreneurs coming into the business law clinic, and our job was to kind of help them start a business and things of that nature. And just so many people came in and were buying property, and then when it was time to sell, they had so many issues. And just upon researching it, I stumbled on it, 1031, and then I just kept researching, and then I found companies that did it. And then as soon as I walked out of school, I went straight down the street like, give me a job.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned having gone to school in San Diego, which is, you know, has the best climate of any city in the country, I think. But are you now in Brooklyn, or are you still working in San Diego? Do you work in San Diego, or did you just move?
Our headquarters is in San Diego. It's 838 G Street, right downtown. I literally just moved here about 6 months ago in Brooklyn to open the second office.
Ah. Well, I must tell you, San Diego was, you know, I remember doing an interview in an office overlooking the bay in San Diego. Well, we were way high up. And as you look out the window, there are aircraft carriers going by, there are destroyers going by, there are submarines going by, there are airplanes taking off from the base.
Yeah,
I asked the attorney, how do you do any work here? How can you work with all that activity out your window? It's crazy. So anyway, let's talk about the 1031. What does one have to do to, number one, get involved and learn about it? If they call you up and say, look, I'm interested, take me through the process of what you do.
Yeah, no problem. If you're selling a house, you know, you list your property, get it out there. Somebody comes and says, hey, I like your property. Love it. I want to buy it. What they're going to do is first put down a deposit, which they put down a deposit, you open an escrow, and then you're basically giving them time to inspect the property to make sure that whatever you're offering or whatever you're selling is true. They're going to check if your light bill is what you say it is, if your basement is what it say it is, if there's any environmental issues. And during that process, the number one thing you have to do is call your accommodator. That's what we're called, or qualified intermediaries. And once you give us a call, we actually call your escrow, and we get a copy of your purchase contract, a copy of your preliminary title report, which is like a birth certificate to the property. And all we're doing is restructuring the deal so that when escrow closes, instead of the money going to you, the seller, which is a taxable event, the moment you touch that money, we restructure the deal so that your money goes to what's called a qualified trust account that we set up to shelter you from taxes.
So this has to be done before the deal is finished, right?
Yes.
If the deal is finished and you've touched the money, it's too late. You're out of luck. That about right?
That's the biggest thing. Like the exact rule is no party to the transaction can touch the funds. The client can never have even constructive receipt of the funds. And by that, they mean the client can't even have access to the funds. The moment they do, that's when the taxable event happens. So what we do is we basically jump into that contract. So instead of the money coming to the client, which triggers the taxable event, the money now goes to this wonderful account that we set up that gives them beautiful tax haven benefits.
But do they have access to the money? When you've set up this
not
account
at all.
And the money
they
goes
can't,
in there, they can't
the
touch
only,
it?
Not at all. The money only goes to whatever property that they tell us to send it to. And that's when the strict timelines come into play.
Well, you better explain that to me. I mean, what's the benefit of selling a property? Obviously, whoever has the property and they're selling it or purchasing it, whatever, you know, they'd want the benefit, the profits, wouldn't they? The money.
Yeah, they would. They would want the profits. But the requirement to the rule to receive the tax, you know, the tax benefit to say, hey, don't worry about having to pay Uncle Sam, is that you have to reinvest into the market. That's the benefit. Uncle Sam is basically saying, hey, we know you owe us basically up to 30 to 33% of that profit you just had, but if you go back into the market and buy a new property at equal or greater value, then don't worry about it. But if you touch that money, oh, every dollar you touch, you got to pay taxes on.
So it's a significant savings, over 30%, 33%. Wow.
The average scenario we see in San Diego specifically is people who bought properties, let's say, 10 years ago, let's say they bought a property for $100,000. If it's anywhere near the downtown metropolitan area, they bought it for $100,000 10 years ago. If they're selling it now, that property is probably valued over $1 million. And the moment they sell, between state tax, federal tax, what's called your depreciation recapture tax, it's typically a blended average of roughly 30 to 33%. So that from $100,000 selling to $1,900,000 profit, that taxable gain is about $320,000.
So if it goes into this tax, the account that you set up, and then they invest, they have to invest the money in another property, I guess, or in something that's equal value or more, as you said. Is that right?
Not something. They have to invest it into real property. So I
it has to be real estate.
Yeah, because okay. a lot of people ask the question, hey, I sold my, you know, my two-family, you know, investment property. Can I go and buy a 7-Eleven? I'm like, no, you can't. You can buy the real estate, but you can't go and buy the business. You can't go from real property to business. It has to be real property.
So I guess if you're planning on selling the building, and we're talking about commercial property, not individual homes. Am I right there?
Well, I also want to make this distinction because people sometimes convolute the idea of commercial. The exact rule, the way it's written, is the property qualifies if it is held for business or investment property. So when you say the word commercial, you know, a lot of people listening could be triggered thinking office space, high rises, which it is included. But you can go and buy a residential home. If you live in there, that's your primary residence, it doesn't qualify.
Yeah.
But you can buy the same home. You don't live in there. In fact, you let a friend live in there, and that friend pays you money. The moment they pay you money, this property is being utilized for business or investment purposes. So
or
that's
if you
commercial.
Run a business out of the home.
Exactly, especially now with the after effects of COVID.
Yeah, that makes – well, then – almost anybody. And is there a bottom limit? I said anywhere from $50,000 to $5 million. But does a home have to be – is that the bottom line? What is it, $50,000?
There's no – it could be $1 to $2. As long as
– it could be.
If you bought something
at
a dollar, if you bought a piece of real estate at a dollar and you sold it for $2, that's a profit of $1. Uncle Sam wants his cut. If you don't want to give it to him, you can do an 1031 exchange.
So then anybody who could be listening to us right now and has a home, let's say the home might be worth, we'll say $100,000. Could be less even.
Yep.
But let's say they have a lawn care business, but they operate that lawn care business out of their home. And then they go out in the morning and they mow lawns for everybody else. They could still qualify for this, right?
Yeah, they definitely can.
No
what typically
I'll
happen is The CPA during the tax will typically take the square footage that they utilize their home for business investment. Like the CPA will literally ask them, hey, where do you run your business? Is there a specific part of your house? And they'll take the square footage, and that portion of the property when they sell is exchangeable.
So not everybody can do this, I gather, and that's why you set up a company to do this. Am I right on that? Or a CPA probably couldn't do it. It needs a specialist like you to handle it, right?
It needs specifically a qualified intermediary, because another rule is that no party to the transaction can conduct a 1031 exchange. So a lot of people think that the escrow handles the 1031 exchange, which is not the truth. They basically partner with us on the back end, and we handle the paperwork. They think their title people do it, or their real estate agent. No, they all have a vested interest. Your title guy is going to get a fee. Your real estate agent is going to get a commission. No party to the transaction. No party can have a vested interest. It has to be a qualified intermediary, and that's us.
So the bottom line in this, it's a significant saving, and I guess your fee is built into whatever the sales price of the property. I guess it's worked out that way. But
yep,
you can explain that to me.
Cost.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yep, we're just part of the closing costs. And with us,
exactly.
if a client is selling a piece of property, they open escrow, and let's say it falls out of escrow. Maybe the buyer couldn't find funding, or they found the crack in the fault line of the house, and then it falls out of escrow. We'll just dispose of our documents, and we don't collect a fee. And if they come back, we'll regenerate documents, but we only get paid if escrow closes.
Well, it's a fascinating story, and I'm sure not many people know anything about this. Give me some examples of the kind of stories you've success stories. Let's put it that way. Properties that you've worked on and how you've helped people, whether they're buildings or homes or whatever. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Absolutely. I think one of our first kind of, oh my gosh, this is a huge deal type of scenario was one of our first clients. He purchased a property out of, I believe, Long Beach, and he just purchased it for Airbnb rentals. He paid for about $1 million for it, and in recent years, Airbnb just blew up, and the property was on the beach. And he held the property for about 7 years, and then he sold, and he immediately called his CPA. He's like, hey, we're selling. We just want to see, how this works. And they're all excited, because they bought it at $1 million. And they're selling at $7 million. That's $6 million profit. So they were very excited until they realized their capital gain, and it was in the couple of millions. So they just gave us a call, kind of freaking out, frantic a bit, and we just had to calm them down. Like, hey, don't worry, I'm gonna show you how to do this. And by the time the entire deal was done, we showed them just how many millions of dollars that they saved. They were literally bawling in tears over the phone. And funny enough, because they saved so much money, they went into a new property for, I believe, $13 million because they had a lot more cash that they would have otherwise had to give to Uncle Sam.
Exactly. That's amazing. I'm tempted to ask you, obviously, well, I will ask you. You were in San Diego. You went to school down there, and then you opened the company. The headquarters is in San Diego. California, is amazing and when it comes to property and the property sales. And the values of properties, having lived in California for many years. Now you're moving to Brooklyn. What brings you to open a branch in Brooklyn? Why?
Well, we try to target major metropolitan areas. In recent years with California, there's been a mass migration. After COVID, you think about it. During COVID, they were literally saying, hey, stay away from other human beings. Stay in your house. Don't touch people. Yeah. Don't even look at them.
Exactly.
So you have all these people in California and New York and all these big cities just a mass migration. They're flooding Texas. They're flooding Florida. They're flooding Las Vegas. So our headquarters is in San Diego. Business really started to pick up because so many people were selling and moving. So we just made a decision like, hey, we're also starting to pick up a lot of clients in the East Coast. Because 1031, by the way, is the federal guideline. So we do 1031s all over the country. But we noticed this heavy uptick from New York. So we said, you know what, we're going to go into the belly of the beast and open a second office there.
Well, I guess that's smart. Are you from the New York area?
No, I'm born in St. Lucia. Then I moved to Connecticut when I was 7, and I was raised in Connecticut.
Wow. How'd you ever leave St. Lucia? <That's> lovely down there. This is a great island. No kidding.
Forcefully removed right. That I cried for a year when I came to America.
I'm sure. Anyway, you're from you lived in the New York area in Connecticut. You know, they're all the same up in there.
Correct.
You know, New York, Connecticut, Jersey. Let me ask you a couple of other questions. Explain to me what a delayed exchange is.
A delayed exchange is pretty much a typical exchange where the person sells the property first, then they purchase the property. They replace the property after. There's also what's called a simultaneous exchange, is when they're selling a property and closing on their new property on the same day. And then you have a reverse exchange, which is just basically they buy the property first, and then they sell the property that they own after, and they still defer all their capital gains tax.
By the way, there are time limits here. I understand that the identification period is 45 days, and then the exchange period is 180 days. What does that mean? What do those two figures mean?
So the taxable event is triggered when the person sells the property and their name is removed from title. Like I said, a title is like a birth certificate to a property. So whenever you're selling your property, if you own your home, like right now, if you own your home, then your name's probably on title to the property. You may just have your name on there blanketly. You may have said, you know what, I want to protect myself a bit. I'm going to own it in an LLC. You may have put it in a trust. But one way or another, there's this document that's like, hey, this entity or individual owns this property. And when that is removed from the property, that's when the taxes get triggered. And when that happens, if the person is doing a 1031 exchange, two timelines kick in order for them to defer all of their capital gains taxes. One, they're going to have 45 days to identify a replacement property. And two, they're going to have 180 days to actually acquire that asset. And in the identification, they have about two ways of going about it. The most common one is what's called a three-property rule, where it's real simple. They just have three options, and it can be as expensive as they want. Like if they sell a property for, you know, $500,000, they can go and identify properties for like $1 million, $10 million, whatever. But they only have three options. The other rule is if they want more options, is they have the 200% rule. And under that rule, they can identify an unlimited number of properties provided that the aggregated sum doesn't exceed 200% of their initial sales price. And that basically means is under that rule, they can identify as many properties as they want, just as long as it doesn't exceed double what they sold for. So if they sold a property for $500,000, they can identify as many properties as they want, just as long as when I total up the properties they identify, it doesn't exceed $1 million, because $1 million is 200% of $500,000, basically double.
I get it. Okay. Well, that's interesting. There are three categories. There's a reverse exchange as well. How about that? What's that like?
The reverse exchange, the most popular exchange out in the seems to be out in the industry right now, because a reverse exchange is when a person basically purchased a property first, then sells their property that they own after and still defers their capital gains. It's a little tricky because there's a rule that the client's name cannot be on both pieces of property at the same time. They can't just go and buy the property and then go and sell the property and do the exchange. No, they have to come through us, and when we do, we basically have to create an entity that purchases the property, and then we give the client a master lease so that they have all the benefits and burdens of the contract, but a third-party entity is on title to the property. And everything happens in reverse. They have 45 days to identify the property that they plan to sell, and they have 180 days to actually sell it. The issue, however, with the reverse is a lot more complicated, because when you put that third-party entity there, if they're going for typical financing to a bank, banks typically look to secure their loans with the property, but the person can't do that because they don't own it, the entity we set up. So reverse exchanges are typically done with hard money or all cash transactions.
I get it. Okay. And then there's a last category, which all this happens on the same day. There are, forget the 180 days or 45 days. That's what you call a simultaneous exchange. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what I call that, the stressful exchange. Cause
oh, really?
Yeah. You have no idea trying when people sell and then escrow has to notarize everything. And it's like this balancing act between getting one escrow to immediately wire the funds and then getting the other escrow to accept them in time before wire cuts off at 5:30 Eastern time. It's difficult and stressful.
Well, these regulations are really strict, aren't they?
Yeah.
They don't screw around to setting these up, do they? They make it tough.
There's no love in the tax and real estate field. It's only hugs and kisses and personal injury.
Let me ask you a question. Obviously, investing in real estate, I'm just wondering if using something like this, you know, a lot of people are worried about having money in banks these days. Would it be considered the smart thing to do, would take their money out of the bank, buy some real estate, and use this in buying the real estate and make that investment really worthwhile for them? Is that a possibility?
Absolutely. If like people don't, I don't think people understand inflation, you know, it's just if people have to spend more money on things, that's just basically their money's being devalued. And their money's just sitting there in a bank and inflation consistently keeps going up, like their money is being devalued. But you just have to be smart about real estate investments because real estate has a very high likelihood of appreciating. So if you put your dollar in a bank, it just sits there. And next year, inflation goes up, that $1 is probably worth 90 cents. But if you put your money into a smart real estate investment, you bought it at, in the example we use, you know, you bought it at $100,000 and then it sells at $1 million, you know, that is a significant increase in that dollar that you placed into real estate.
Well, the key here is that whenever anybody is interested in making a purchase in real estate, that they've got to consider this 1031 before they consummate that deal or before it's concluded. If they don't do that, then they're kind of out of luck as far as saving the capital gains tax, right? It's too late.
30% to 33%.
Yep.
Well,
when
a lot of money.
You sit down and look at the figures and look at what you can save, it is really considerable. It certainly is. And do you think most attorneys or those who, you know, who help people when they're buying or selling properties are familiar with these? Do they ever recommend it to them? Or most of them just don't deal with that? How do you answer that?
A lot of people think this is like a procedural thing that happens automatically during the buying or selling of a real estate asset. It's not. It's really just when you have a really good real estate agent that informs you or a CPA that informs you. But a lot of people think this is just like a procedural part, especially when they're doing their taxes. Like people just automatically think they're going to get these deductions and this and that. Like no. You actually have to take a proactive step at a very specific point in a real estate transaction, and that specifically is when you open escrow when you're selling a property. If you didn't get us involved and that funds were wired to your account, like you're just having a tough conversation with your CPA and having to deal with a significant tax bill at the end of the year.
Well, I must tell you, this all sounds very, very smart. I haven't heard of this before, and I'm sure many of the majority of folks listening to us haven't.
Do you own a home? Do you own a home?
Yeah.
You own a home. All right. Let me give you a gift free of charge. Should you ever sell your home because you live in it, you cannot do a 1031. But what you can do is what's called a 121. And your CPA is not just going to automatically recommend this, but make sure you recommend this to him should you ever sell your property. Recommend that you do what's called a 121 homeowner's exemption. And under that rule, any capital gains that you have up to $250,000, meaning you bought it at $100,000 and it appreciates to $350,000, that's $250,000 worth of profit. You're going to be exempt.
Lance, that's great news. I wish we'd have heard about this before. Listen, we're almost out of time. We are out of time.
Oh.
I got to tell everybody, you got a great website. It's growth1031.com. growth1031.com, and you can find out more about Lance's services. Lance, thank you. This has been fascinating. We really appreciate your being with us. Hopefully we can do this again, okay? Take care.
Brother.
You're a fountain of information. Really good. We appreciate it. All right.
Absolutely.
Take care.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.
That's it, folks. I'm Doug Llewellyn. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.